Hello and welcome to Uncommon Law, my podcast about true stories from my life experience of over 50 years as a lawyer and trial judge. This is a look at the law from the inside out, stuff they don't teach in law school. This is Judge Rudy Greco, retired justice of the New York State Supreme Court. There were two brothers. They were Iranian, Ari and Manoush. And they were two different kinds of characters. Ari was a little bit taller than Manoush and a little chubby. Manoush was very short and very spare. And Ari was a sharp dresser. He always wore Italian silk suits. And he was a smooth talker. And Manoush was a little guy, looked like Groucho Marx. His tailor was The Gap. And he always looked unkempt and sloppy. And he had this little mustache. But the two of them were thick as thieves. They were real characters. And they made their living selling Persian rugs, which fit because they were both Iranian. And they claimed, of course, to be cousins of the famous Israeli general, the victor in the Six-Day War, Moshe Dayan. I don't know if he was really their cousin or not, but they said he was. And I took it as gospel for what it was worth. And I made their acquaintance, again, up at the Upper East Side bar that my friend owned, the Racing Club on 67th Street, 3rd Avenue, because Ari and Manoush used to sell their rugs out of a mall where there were a lot of booths manned by antique dealers and some rug dealers, many of whom were Iranian ethnics as well. So they all shared this space, and they did okay. And the time came when they asked me to represent their wives. There was a bit of a quote-unquote misunderstanding. The wives were arrested for shoplifting. Now, these gals were pretty well off. They didn't have to shoplift, but they did. And I did represent them, and we made a deal for community service. They had never done anything before. It was an embarrassment for them. A relatively minor proposition, and I got them community service with their own rabbi, who ran an Iranian Jewish synagogue in Forest Hills. And that went well, except for one thing. The rabbi actually wanted them to do community service. He asked them to mop floors, clean tables in the cafeteria for the kids, and sweep and wash dishes. They had none of which they had ever done in their entire lives. And they felt this was like indentured servitude. It was cruel and inhuman punishment. But we straightened it all out, and they did do the work. And I told them it was better than going to jail. They want to go to jail. We could arrange that. So they quieted it down, and the rabbi calmed down a little bit and eased up on the workload and hired some other help, and we straightened that out. Months went by, and Ari called me up again. He said, "Oh, Rudy, I want you." He says, "Manoush and I, we have a new place of business." He said, "We want you to come and see the new place of business." And where was it? It was on the ground floor of Park Avenue down in the 20s, which is, by the way, the Persian rug district. There's a district for everything in New York, a diamond district, the fur district, the stock market, the financial district. There's always a district for, it's there. And these guys are right in the middle of the Iranian rug district, which was a good place to be if you're selling Iranian carpets. There's plenty of business around. So my wife and I needed a new area rug for the living room. I said, "Look, this would be a nice opportunity. I can say hello to these guys. And maybe we can buy a nice rug, too, and I'm sure they'll treat us well, and we can do something like that." Well, we went, and this was the second day in their new premises. And they made a big deal of greeting my wife and I, and said, "Oh, come on in, see everything." And we looked around, and my wife was looking, and Ari said, "Oh, Manoush, show Rudy the basement. Show Rudy the basement. I'll show his wife some rugs. You show him the basement. Show him what I want you to show him." So Manoush dutifully took me downstairs, say, "Rudy, you got to see this." And I go downstairs, and it's a basement, and there are rugs everywhere, but they're stacked on pallets. The pallets are about 6 or 8 inches raised off the floor, maybe 10 inches, and the rugs are stacked on there. And then one part of the basement storage area was a puddle with some water, And it was a wide puddle, but it wasn't high. It was maybe a quarter of an inch of water, maybe a half inch. There had been a very steady rainfall the day before when they opened the business. And Ari said, look, look at this water. Look, look. And then I said, okay, I look. What about it? Oh, well, let's go upstairs. So we go upstairs. And, excuse me, Manoush said, you know, take a look at this. And we went upstairs to join Ari. And Ari said, Rudy, did you see the water? I said, yes. Yes, Ari. Manoush, you showed him? Yeah. I showed him all the water. I said, well, can we sue? Can we sue the landlord? I said, you want to sue the landlord? You're only here one day. That's a nice way to start off a relationship. What kind of a lease do you have? 10 years and you want to sue the landlord on the first day, the second day of the lease? Well, Rudy, we, you know, look at the water. We could sue him. I said, listen, this is America. The national sport is litigation. People sue people all the time. It's not baseball. The national sport is litigation. You could sue anybody. It's a free country. But you're not going to win anything. Why are we not going to win? I said, well, you have no damage. I said, all your carpets are up on pallets where they're supposed to be, and there was no water damage. There's nothing. Oh, wait a minute, Manoush said. Rudy, if you want damage, we make damage. He said, how much damage you want? I said, no, Manoush, I don't want damage. You don't have damage, and you don't need it. Trust me, okay? Yeah, you don't need it. Oh, he was disappointed. But the good part of it is we did find a nice rug. They gave us a nice price, and it's in my living room. It's a Chinese silk rug. It wasn't Persian, but it's quite nice. And it's been in my living room for years. All right, a couple of months go by, and I get another phone call from Ari. And every time I get phone calls from Ari, the hair on my neck stands up. I said, what is it? He's very excited. Rudy, Ari, listen, they're crying in Tehran. They're crying in Tel Aviv. My family, they're crying in Paris. Everybody crying. I says, all right, excuse me. Everybody's crying, Ari. What are they crying? Rudy, they're all crying. My cousin. What happened to your cousin? My cousin, he went to the airport 12 days ago. He got me going. 12 days ago, my cousin went to the airport. He took a private cab, taxi to the airport, and nobody could find him. And now my cousins, the whole family, everybody's crying in terror. I says, I got it. My cousins, his family, they want to come and see you, Rudy. Please, you could help them. Please. We have to come. I said, okay, you can come today. Tell everybody to stop crying for now. Yeah, and come over with your cousins. When you come? He said, this afternoon. Can we come? I said, sure. Well, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and Ari shows up with three quote-unquote cousins, two guys and a gal, all in their early 30s, you know, late 20s, early 30s, all of them wearing black leather jackets with eyes like cobras. These people, there was no warmth at all. If they looked like grieving relatives, you could have fooled me. They looked like deadly cobras about to strike. They were cold as ice. I said, well, what's the problem? They said, well, we can't find our cousin. And Ari says that you could help because you have a lot of friends and contacts, and maybe you could help us locate him. We went to the Israeli consulate, and they said maybe Israeli security has him. They seemed to hint that maybe Israeli security. Well, Israeli security is a tough piece of work because everything in Israel is a matter of national defense. And I knew that. I said, okay, what happened with your cousin? They said, well, he went to the airport. I said, he goes all the time. And it turns out the cousin had, I think, three or four passports. He had an American passport, an Iranian passport, a French passport, and an Israeli passport. Not necessarily in the same names. Maybe they were. I don't even remember. This guy was a frequent flyer of sorts. So I knew he was in some kind of monkey business, and I had a good guess as to what it was. Looking at the cousins, they were not the philanthropic types. So I said, okay. I said, well, I can make a few phone calls. You can give me a retainer, and I can try to check. You come back tomorrow, and I'll let you know what's going on as far as my checking. So they left, and they agreed to the retainer. It was a good retainer. It was fair. didn't blink. And I said, if I have to go searching, by the way, anywhere, if you want me to go anywhere, it's going to be a lot more money, and we'll talk about that if and when that possibility arises. I said, okay, fine. They were going to come back the next day. The first thing I did was call up my cousin, who was a detective on the DA squad in Manhattan. And I said to my cousin, I said, Joe, this such and such a guy, can you check and see if anybody in law enforcement here has a hold on this guy? He's been absent for 12 days. They can't find him. He said, okay, I'll call you back. He called me back in about an hour. He says, I checked all my sources and all the DA's offices in the city. Nobody has this guy in any law enforcement, certainly not New York City. He said, I don't know about the feds. I said, well, they said that they spoke at the Israeli consulate and they said the Israeli security might have him. He says, well, Israeli security is another ball game altogether. Those guys are serious business. He said, years ago, in my job, he said, we knew they had somebody over there in Israel that we wanted, and he was very much wanted by us. And they told us just to come to the airport. That's all they said. We go to the airport at a certain time, and they said, wait outside the terminal, the El Al terminal. All these terminals, Alitalia, Air France, El Al, whatever they are for different countries, are under the law foreign territory. We couldn't go in there as New York cops. We can't go in there. That's foreign territory. It might as well be Israel or France or Italy or whatever it was. Two guys came. We wait outside by the window, and two guys came and looked at us in an inquiring sort of a way, and we understood who we were. We all recognized one another, and they motioned with their hands like, to stay still, just stay here and wait. And we did. We waited. We were right near the doorway. 5 minutes later, the doorway opens up, and these two guys throw the guy we were looking for out the window, head first, onto the sidewalk, no questions asked, and he was ours. And now we apprehended him, we arrested him. He said, they're serious business, he said, but you're not going to get anything out of them. They don't divulge anything, he said. Because, again, it's always about national defense with them. It's national security. My next phone call was to a friend of mine who had been an adversary. He was an assistant U.S. attorney and had risen up the ranks, and he was now in New York City in charge of the Witness Protection Program, and he ran the whole thing. He was the chief administrator of that whole program, and I called him up. I said, this is off the record. It's a humane question here. Can you tell me if you or any federal authority that you know of locally here in the city, in either in the Eastern or the Southern District in Manhattan or the Eastern District here in Brooklyn, has this guy? He says, give me the name. And I gave him the name. And he called me back in 5 minutes. He says, no way. There's nothing here. We have nothing on this guy at all. He's not with us. I said, okay, I appreciate it. Thanks a million. Next phone call I made was to a client of mine who was in the other world, opposite from law enforcement. And he was a high-up guy, and he was very, very well-placed. And he was a very straightforward and decent guy. And I called him up. I said, do you know of anybody got a handle on anybody, or this guy ran afoul of anybody that you know of? Have you heard of anything like this? He says, who's the guy? I told him, and he checked, and he says, no, there's nobody. Nobody I know has got anybody. Things are very quiet and peaceful. I said, great, thank you. The family came the next day, and I told them what I did, and they said, maybe you can go to Paris. Can we hire you to go to Paris? Because he might be there or in Tehran or any. I said, you can hire me to go anywhere if you're going to pay, but this is what it's going to cost. And I gave them a figure. I said, I want to fly first class, stay first class, and you're going to pay me first class. I can make these inquiries. I know what to do. I know how to do it in a quiet and diplomatic way, but I gave them a price that I quoted them a fee that I knew was very, very high. And it was intended to put them off, maybe so that they wouldn't hire me, because I didn't really want this kind of an assignment. This is a tough piece of work, and I don't think it was going to end well anyway. And they said, that's not a problem. I said, okay, we can do that. I said, well, hold on. There's one more thing that you want to do. They said, what's that? I said, well, has anybody called the coroner, this New York City coroner, or the morgue? And they said, no. I said, well, you might want to, as family, you might want to called the morgue. I opened up my little green book with all the city listings in it and everything else, and I gave them the phone number. It's there on 2nd Avenue, right next to NYU Hospital, around 30th Street. I said, you can go there, and as family members, you know, they'll listen to your inquiry, and they'll tell you if they have anybody or anything like that. I said, okay. I said, and then you can decide if you want to do anything else, but do that first. So they left my office. That was in the morning, the following morning, and that afternoon, I get a phone call from Ari. Rudy, thank you so much. The family thanks you. Everybody's crying in Tehran and in Tel Aviv and in Paris because they found my cousin in the morgue. And sometimes, you know, you can search everywhere. And as I say, things are right under your nose. So the last thing I got from Ari and the last time I heard from him was another phone call. Rudy, please. They're trying to kill my brother. I said, what did they do to Manoush? What did he do? Nothing, nothing, Rudy. They beat him to within an inch of his life. He almost died. They tried to kill him. I said, well, you want to come and tell me the story? Oh, well, I said, where was he? At the rug auction. I said, what happened at the rug auction? What happened? He said, nothing. He did nothing. What really happened was Manoush was bidding for rugs against some of his Iranian countrymen who had already rigged the bidding among themselves, and they took umbrage with the fact that he was going to upset the apple cart that they had taken great pains to set up, and they beat him to within an inch of his life. And when I got through the story with Ari, I said, all right, we dismissed it and everything else, and I've never heard from them since. God bless them, wherever they may be. Thanks for listening. Come back next week for another episode of Uncommon Law, Lessons They Don't Teach in Law School. I'm Judge Rudy Greco. Court is adjourned.